WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Conflict building near 25th and Lexington in Broadview, outside the ICE immigration processing facility.
We've been forced into a free speech zone. Its very existence implies that everywhere else is a non-free speech zone.
Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth attempted once again unsuccessfully to meet with ICE officials.
I've never had this kind of stonewalling by any presidential administration. Something's going on in there that they don't want us to see.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news in and around Chicago after the conversation that you just clicked on. But before we get to this segment with Crossing Borders Music String Quartet featuring a live in-studio performance, In the Loop producer Sienna Greaves is here with me. Now, she produced this segment and others like it. They've highlighted the way that Chicagoans are just getting creative in their response to ICE action here in Chicago. Hey, Sienna, good to see you again.
Hi, Sasha. How you doing?
Doing well. So this is another day, and like I alluded to there, another example of Chicagoans just really pulling together and supporting their neighbors.
Yeah, we've been so fortunate to be able to tell so many great stories of Chicagoans coming up with such unique and inventive ways in which they are responding to this moment and, most importantly, you know, supporting their neighbors.
And in this case, we're talking music.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, producers are always on the hunt for good talkers. And I had a really great pre-interview with Tom Clues, who is a cellist and one of the co-founders of Crossing Borders Music. Mm-hmm. You know, he is so passionate about this group and its mission of using music to shine a light on human rights abuses. It's just really impressive and creative stuff.
Yeah, so they're performing today outside Broadview this afternoon, Monday afternoon, I should say. But they're performing outside. I want to stress outside because they're not allowed in.
Yes, Sasha. Access to this facility is still heavily restricted. Mm. Just a Saturday, we saw a priest hoping to give communion to people who have been detained, and they were denied entry to the Immigration and Customs facility for a second time in 3 weeks.
Jeez.
So the Crossing Borders Music String Ensemble will perform at Broadview, but outside in the designated free speech area on Beach Street near the ICE facility.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one. Thank you so much, Sienna.
Thank you, Sasha.
At the table, Tom Clues, cellist and co-founder of Crossing Borders Music, and Wilfred Farkerson, a violist with Crossing Borders. Tom, let me start with you. Tell us more. I gave a little teaser there, but I want you to dig more into that mission of Crossing Borders Music, because I think what you're doing is pretty unique.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, WBEZ played a key role in the founding of Crossing Borders Music almost 15 years ago after Haiti's earthquake. I had been going to Haiti since 2000 mm-hmm. and talked to Haitians in Haiti after the earthquake, knowing that when I returned, I would be on WBEZ to talk about my experiences there. So I asked them what message would they want me to share on the radio, and I was expecting, please send food and water and clothing. But in my ignorance, I found out they asked, please represent who we really are. Please let people in the United States see us for who we really are and all of our complete humanity and complexity. Mm. And that answer and that request has been the impetus and central to the mission of the work of Crossing Borders Music ever since. So we take people whose stories and backgrounds are suppressed and we share who they are as they want people to know them through music.
Speaking up for the underrepresented.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and letting them speak for themselves as much as we possibly can.
So why use chamber music, Wilfred, to carry out that mission? Tell me how the two are connected.
I think there's a very deep link between chamber music and activism as far as having people work together. Chamber music, for anyone that doesn't know, is music for a small group, originally made for music in small rooms, chamber rooms, and old homes. And we, throughout our rehearsal processes and crossing borders, we are working very, very actively and intimately with each other and our small quartet of four people, and also with our collaborators, which are usually from these suppressed backgrounds from all over the world. And I think just that, you know, speaks for itself and how much that is linked to activism and engaging in community work.
Yeah. So you, Tom, you said, you know, we're highlighting human rights abuses, right? And you talked about the inspiration of that trip to Haiti, but you've been doing this for other countries.
Yeah.
And representing composers from other parts of the globe.
Indeed. So we've highlighted through music people facing human rights abuses, including Rohingya from Myanmar, Baha'is from Iran, people facing the political insecurity in Haiti still today. I wasn't expecting to be highlighting human rights abuses right here in our backyard, but here we are.
Tell me more about that, right? Because we're talking West Suburban Broadview, very close to Chicago, where we sit in this moment. Did you ever expect that things would have gotten to this level? I would love to hear from both of you.
Growing up, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, in the South, and also being Black, there's always been, you know, a knowing of how bad things have been, but watching people, you know, get put in vans and snatched and totally separated from their families. I'm also a child of an immigrant.
So this hits in a different way too.
Especially right now.
Yeah, I am as well.
I never thought I would really be seeing it happen so casually in broad daylight, but yeah, I don't know if I can answer if I imagined it.
That's your
worse.
Answer.
Yeah.
That's your answer, right? I mean, we, you know, as people of color, as minorities, as in both your cases, children of immigrants, we've seen injustices in the past, heard of injustices, you know, that sort of, you know, predate us. But I think there's still some glimmer of hope within us that, like, surely it won't be that bad in present day. Surely it can't get worse, but then it does.
Yeah.
So you respond with music.
Indeed. Yeah. And I think one of the challenges that we face, usually we would talk to people facing the challenges that they're facing, the marginalization that they're facing, and ask, find the musicians within that group
right.
to collaborate with and ask, you know, how would you like us to share your story? Would you like us to share your story? In this case, we can't even talk to the people inside. Even their lawyers and family members don't really have access to the people who are inside. It's sort of this black box. And so it poses a challenge for us. We can't communicate with the people inside because nobody can communicate reliably with the people inside.
But the show must go on, right?
Right. So we're doing our best.
You're doing your best. Tell me, Wilfred, who's performing today?
Me, Tom, and our colleague Caroline, another member of Crossing Borders Music.
Okay.
We're performing today.
And what are the pieces, Tom, that you've selected for today's performance?
Yeah, we're going to play here in the studio, actually a piece that I played so many years ago, 15 years ago after the earthquake, to
nice.
Try to represent Haitians and Haiti and change narratives. Here we are still doing the same thing 15 years later.
Yes.
Also music from Cambodia this afternoon, music from Peru.
Wonderful. Why don't you set up and go ahead and give us a sample of what folks will hear outside of Broadview this afternoon. Take it away, gentlemen.
Thank you. brilliant. Cellist Tom Clues and violist Wilfred Farquharson. Tell me, Tom, about, first of all, the name of that piece and that song choice.
Yeah, this was Erzeli Malad by Werner Jaegerhuber, despite his very German name, and he did have a German father. He was a Haitian, born in Haiti.
Okay.
His mother was Haitian. He was very rooted in Haitian folk music. He studied music in Germany. When Nazis came to power, it was a bad time to be a black or mixed race person in Germany. So he returned to Haiti and spent the rest of his life there writing music that celebrated Haitian folk songs. So this is an original composition, but it's using melodies that come from the Haitian religious practices and Haitian traditional music.
Sounds like a perfect choice for today.
Yeah, and especially because he wanted to show people, like so many Haitian composers, that Haitians were just as capable of writing Western art music as any European, and that Haitian cultural traditions were just as worthy of being celebrated as any European traditions were.
What do you hope to achieve with this performance, Wilfred?
With this performance, I hope to achieve, I mean, since the people being detained inside the facility cannot hear us, that hopefully all of their friends and family, they hear us. People know that we care. People know that music, as it always has been, will be used as a form of resistance and protest, and that we will keep showing up for them no matter what and however way we can.
How does it feel knowing that something so beautiful that you just provided with us, you can't go inside the facility and share that with the folks in there?
Oh, it feels horrible. That's the most immediate way to put it. I really, really wish that we can go inside and have them hear this, and hopefully one day they can. But I think, like what Tom was saying earlier, it's a injustice that they're not able to.
It reminds me of how I feel when I see clergy who in the past have always been able to visit people in the Broadview Detention Center.
And they're also being shut out.
Yes, yes. Are not allowed to visit people inside. They've tried as much as they can to pray with the people inside as they've always been able to, and as is the right of the people inside to receive, you know, spiritual care, just as people on death row do, but the people on death row have that right recognized, whereas the people at Broadview don't.
So they won't be able to hear the music, but if you have the ears of the folks who are inside right now, I'd love to hear from you both. What's your message to them? What do you want them to know? You first, Tom.
Sure. More than anything, that we are thinking of the people inside, that we recognize that they're humans and deserve to be treated like humans, just like anybody else. I think that's fundamental, that we see that their basic human rights are not being recognized in the way that they're treated. I don't know if listeners know all of the details about the conditions under which people are kept, but they're
We've been reporting it. So suntimes.com, wbez.org, if you want to catch up. It's not good inside there. Horrible conditions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's hard to countenance, and it's also hard to know that we don't really know.
Yeah.
We can't tell how bad it is, because even people like U.S. senators who have a legal right to go in are not being allowed inside. So we can only assume that it's worse than what we're hearing about, because otherwise the people in charge would like people to see to dispel these rumors.
Your message, Wilfred?
My message to the people inside, if they do ever hear this, is that we, like Tom said, see that your human rights are being violated. We will continue to fight for them to be reinstated, free, be treated like a person, like a human that deserves to be here freely. And, yeah, that we care.
Wilfred Farquharson and Tom Clues of Crossing Borders Music Quartet. Thank you both so much. Have a wonderful show this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And now it's time to break down the biggest headlines and stories of the day. At the table was WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times criminal justice reporter and editor Tom Shuba. We started with an update on SNAP benefits, or food stamps, which are under threat by the government shutdown. So here's Claire with an update from a federal judge.
So we know that the standard Illinois payment window is typically between the 1st and 20th of the month for these benefits, of course, based on individual case numbers. But that schedule is being disrupted, right, by the government shutdown. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker did sign an executive order releasing $20 million to support food banks and pantries across Illinois. So Pritzker says this will be one of the only ways, really, that the state can offer support.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when the system shut down Saturday, that money went out. Pritzker says recipients in Illinois won't be able to access their accounts, though. So food banks are open. We saw increases over the weekend at Breakthrough Fresh Market. That's in Chicago's Garfield Park.
Right.
And overwhelming, too. This was in Evanston. Organizers at a food drive were telling the Sun-Times that they had so much food, so much toiletries, so much supplies that they were even looking for additional places to give some of this aid to people in need.
Oh, wow.
So they were overwhelmed in the best way possible. You know, as you mentioned earlier, people are stepping up.
I did see some long, extra long lines driving on the south side on Saturday, especially long line along Jefferson in South Shore. Stay tuned, folks. In about 10 minutes on In the Loop, we're going to go in depth on the status of SNAP benefits and what comes next. Now, Tom, let's turn to immigration. ICE is using a type of facial recognition software that Illinois police cannot use. First off, what is Clearview AI?
So Clearview AI is essentially like an application that the New York Times exposed its use after it started to be given to law enforcement agencies to kind of test and then procure. And essentially what you can do is like take a photo of maybe Sasha and put it in, and what it'll do, you do a search, and it'll find every photo that matches that photo pulled, scraped from the entire internet, from Facebook, from Google, from all these places, right? And so it create, you know, the original photo makes a scan of your face, and then the other photos are matched to that scan. And then you're able to essentially find, you know, this person's
find who you're looking for.
Background.
So this is how it's being used on a day-to-day basis here in the Chicago area?
That's how the app is used. We're not exactly sure how it's being used in Chicago. We know that law enforcement in Chicago is using facial recognition. There are different types of facial recognition that immigration authorities have, but they do have a new, relatively new, right before the implementation of Operation Midway Blitz, 9.2, I believe, million-dollar contract with Clearview. So how it's being used, a bit of a mystery.
And how it's being used here, right? Because this state's got one of the strongest laws on the books of any state when it comes to digital privacy. Does that just not apply in this case?
Yeah, it's a state law, right? So there was a settlement in this in a lawsuit that the ACLU and some other parties brought about the violation to this law, which is called BIPA, that essentially protects people's biometrics, their face scans, their fingerprints, different things like that. And the settlement, you know, barred the use of Clearview by law enforcement for 5 years, barred the use of Clearview by basically any business across the country.
Yeah.
So what Clearview was left with was federal government procurement.
I see.
They have earned a lot of money going down that road.
What are critics like Illinois' U.S. Senator Dick Durbin saying?
Durbin was particularly upset. One part of our reporting that we found was that there was a policy under Biden that was put in place essentially regulating the use of facial recognition by the Department of Homeland Security. And a watchdog agency pointed out that this had been deleted or taken offline. And what we found was that it was still offline. And while the DHS said, no, this remains in effect, Durbin said he's very concerned that, you know, it appears that there's little kind of protection and oversight. Again, like, we have this great law, or, you know, this great, what advocates would call a great law, very strong law protecting people's privacy rights here, but there is no facial recognition law on the federal level.
Claire, Evanston police are gathering evidence after a U.S. Border Patrol vehicle crash led to a violent arrest, which was caught on video. What's that story?
Right. So a U.S. Border Patrol vehicle crash was caught on video, went pretty viral because it spurred sort of this fairly forceful arrest. The episode, it took place Friday in Evanston, included an agent punching a man in the head who was then pinned to the ground. Videos show the crowd trying to interfere with agents using pepper spray at times, also pointing guns at times directly at people. The Department of Homeland Security later said the officer who hit the man in the head delivered, quote, defensive strikes after the man, quote, grabbed the agent's genitals and squeezed. So federal agents, as we know, have been very active in Evanston specifically, also in other suburbs, including Oak Park, and as we know clearly in Broadview, where the ICE processing facility is, as all part of this Operation Midway Blitz. But things, you know, continue to escalate. Mm-hmm. People continue to film what's going on, which then sort of leads to this discrepancy of what Border Patrol agents are saying versus what people think that, you know, they're seeing on video.
Well, of course, you know, ordering body cams to be worn by these agents, that's, of course, a step in the right direction. We got good news, Claire. After a wild fourth quarter yesterday, the Bears won. They defeated the Cincinnati Bengals. For folks who missed it, what happened?
It was a really wild game, and I was actually telling Seymour co-host Patrick Smith earlier this morning, I didn't start watching the game until the fourth quarter, which is sort of when all the action happened. A lot of back and forth between the teams over the course of the game, and three touchdowns happened in the final 2 minutes. Bears got a bit of a breakaway. They got an interception, leading to a sizable lead. Everybody's feeling good, and then comes quarterback Joe Flacco and the Bengals. Flacco then put the Bengals ahead 42-41, 9-yard touchdown pass from him. Then Williams and the Bears get the ball, 54 seconds left, and they delivered. Connected with the tight end. It was a very, very wild
game. An exciting finish. Tom, I know you watched.
I did watch.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I was filing a story, so I was watching while I was writing, but I did watch the whole fourth quarter fully. But as a lifelong Bears fan, we've had a couple games this year, the Las Vegas game, the Washington game, and this game, where like any other time in my history of being a Bears fan, the Bears would have lost those games and it would have ruined my week. And
right.
But like there's some sort of magic brewing happening, right? Like things are coalescing. They're being able to like, you know, make that last drive. I thought that was like the craziest play call, right? You know, going down the field, they need to kick a field goal to win technically, you know, no timeouts. So you would assume they're thrown to the sideline so they can get out. Go up the middle to the tight end.
He
breaks two tackles and scores a touchdown. It was like,
I'm so happy that there's good Chicago news, sports news.
Two receptions by the quarterback. So they've been playing some wonky ball, as Tom mentioned, some play calling, sort of untraditional. But fans are engaged.
That's Ben Johnson, right? Yeah. Like he's opened the playbook up, and you know Caleb is trying to move more, I think, and you know It's really exciting. I mean, it's at a time like this, it does feel good that the Bears don't completely suck.
Something to smile about, that's for sure.
We'll take it.
Let's pivot, Claire, because we are now in month two of this federal government shutdown. Tell us about the impacts that we're seeing at the airports, O'Hare, Midway, and other ones around the country, too.
Yeah, we were seeing sizable delays and cancellation in Dallas, also at Newark Airport, which is one of United Airlines, Chicago-based United hubs, over the weekend. And here in Chicago, there were numerous cancellations yesterday and delays. Midway, sort of unscathed. I read this morning they had just one cancellation, but people feeling the effects and heading into the second month, it's being predicted that this is just going to get worse and worse and worse. Because why show up for work without a paycheck?
That's right. Other stories that you're watching?
Yeah, this was kind of interesting this morning. The rate of 911 calls made in Chicago apparently has declined in the last 2 months since the start of Operation Midway Blitz. This is according to a Tribune review of city data, we should mention, but the most prominent decreases in these 911 calls, Little Village, home to Chicago's largest Mexican-American population, calls to 911 dropped 21%. So neighborhood leaders are saying that the data doesn't just reflect crime being down in the neighborhood, but also the fear of federal immigration enforcement. Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling responding, saying that police do want people to call them if they are in need of emergency services, and that is regardless of their status.
Hmm. Well, Tom, I want to get into your latest story. This one concerns some Chicagoans who were supposed to help ease cyber attacks. But the FBI says they were the culprits. Fill us in.
Yeah. Well, so essentially, a lot of people have probably heard of ransomware, which is essentially like a hacking tool that you can, you know, if you work for, say, a company, you might click on a malicious link and it will give hackers access to all of your computer systems, and they can lock them, and then they can say, we will unlock them for you if you pay us this amount of money.
Mm. And these attacks have become, you know, pretty common in recent years, right?
They're hugely common. All they affect companies, universities, all sorts of different entities, right? But so there's this kind of, you know, growing industry within it where there's a go-between, right? There's the hackers, there's the company, and then there's a company in the middle that negotiates the ransoms and helps like kind of come to the middle on. Mm-hmm. And so one of these companies that does this is called Digital Mint, and it's based in Chicago. And what the feds allege is that two employees of Digital Mint, one of whom has been indicted and one of whom has not, mm-hmm. and an employee of another cybersecurity company decided to take it upon themselves to start doing ransomware attacks, to do the same exact thing, to target companies with malicious software to try to negotiate ransoms. And they had limited success, but they did get one ransom of $1.2 million of, I think, the five companies that they did hack. But
wow. Have they said anything for themselves here? Like, why would you do that?
Not to me, no. And, I mean, it's just, it is... It's a truly strange
weird
story
flip of events. Yeah.
For our time, right? Like, right. You know, the good guys turn into the bad guys, and
so what happens next?
We'll see how their court cases play out. You know, one of the defendants has a somewhat interesting attorney who once represented a guy named Weave, who was a well-known computer hacker who then became a well-known neo-Nazi. Mm. So we'll see how he and his presence and his role in the case play out. I think it will be quite interesting.
Right. Before we wrap, Tom, as we continue to monitor the immigration situation here in Chicago, what's going to be on your radar? What are you keeping your eye on?
Oh, man, it's hard to keep an eye on anything, right? I mean, I think it's just...
It's moving quickly, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, everything is quite disorienting. So, I mean, you know, obviously keeping an eye on the use of force and you know, the probable cause for arrests and all of these things that are being raised in court. If we're going to see a release of people who've been detained because they were, you know, arrested on warrantless arrests. I mean, there are all of these just hugely impactful, important issues playing out in real time. And it feels like they're, you know, some days it feels like they're just like, you know, shoot flying by you, like trains passing you or something. And you're trying to keep up with everything. But
right.
Yeah, I think those, you know, the concerns about abuses.
Yes.
Most broadly are interesting to me.
That's Tom Shuba of the Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane. You can read Tom's investigations at suntimes.com.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.
Rise and Shy. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.